Mountain, Island, Lightning Bolt, Spell Pierce, Switchblade, Stab Wound, Red Mage, Blue Mage.
Hello, welcome back to Red Mage, Blue Mage. I am the Blue Mage, Kenny. That is the Red Mage, Amber.
You point to a shadow in a corner. Hi, it's me. I'm in the corner. I'm the little cockroach.
Are you ready? Are you excited?
I am exhausted and tired because I have gotten my second vaccine shot yesterday.
Okay.
And I am dying.
What are your symptoms like right now?
Basically, from my elbow on my left arm all the way up to right below my ear, the lymph node there is completely sore. And
wow.
Anytime I stretch my arm out or lift it up in any way, it feels like, I don't know, like I've been lifting weights for 2 days straight or something.
Yeah.
It is that tender. And I don't like it to be touched. It's like, I'm like a little like hissing goblin whenever anybody comes around my left arm, like, stay away, because it just is so tender.
So different from normal.
And then, I also have on and off headaches, I think because of that tension. I'm trying not to take medicine because I don't want to, like, I want my body to fight the virus and not have help. And so I've not been taking any headache medicine. I basically passed out for a good, like, 25 minutes earlier.
That's a good nap.
I'm just tired. So, yeah, I'm ready.
Well, I mean, two things. One, when I had my vaccine, my arm was dead as well on the injection site. The actual, like, injection, the needle.
Oh, yeah, it's a problem. No big deal.
Barely noticed it. And then I was like, oh, this is great. And then the next day for me personally, it was just like exactly like you said. It's as if you worked out super, super hard the previous day. And your arm is just dead. That's what it was for me for the next week, basically.
Yeah, I mean, for me, also, the first shot I got, because you had the Johnson & Johnson, the one-shotter.
I did.
I have Moderna two-shot. And so, like, after the, I don't know, it was like 2 days of soreness. And it wasn't even this sore. This is way more sore than the first time. And a week later, literally a week to the day, my injection site got super swollen and like itchy, like
right.
I had a rash. It was like it just right. swole up, and I was like, "What in the world? Why is this happening now?"
I had a little mini version of that, a little tiny spot that inflamed, like days later.
You know what else is inflamed?
What?
My passion for Magic the Gathering.
Wow, good segue.
You're welcome.
All right, well. You know, it's a timely episode. We have spoiler season upon us, as always. It's Modern Horizons Part 2, and I know that you have been just eagerly watching the spoilers and looking at what cards you're interested in. You're shaking your head.
Yes, I am shaking my head. I didn't even know this was a thing that was out until a couple days ago.
Let's get into a pick a card.
Pick a card. You son of a bitch.
So before we actually get into deciding what cards we're interested in here, I want to hear from your perspective, because you just said, I didn't even know this was a thing that was happening. What is your relationship with Modern Horizons / Magic products right now?
Like usual, I'm mostly out of the loop. I forgot that Modern Horizons 2... Like, okay, it's basically I know things are happening because I see it online, because of the Magic the Gathering people that I'm following, or because, you know, Brandon plays, or that you say something or show me stuff. So usually I have this, like, tertiary, like, knowledge... bubbles floating around me. And so I know it's out. And I mean, Modern, whatever. Like, I don't play Modern. So, like, it's okay. you know, sometimes Brandon will buy, I don't think even Brandon's buying a box for this Modern Horizons, but he did for the first one, and we played Mini Masters with that. That was back when they had like slivers and stuff in that first yep. Modern Horizons. And then, like, I'll be honest, like, you told me we're gonna do a pick a card, and for some reason I thought we were only picking two cards because this is Modern Horizons 2. So I only picked two cards. So listener, full disclosure, before, like, 3 hours before this recording, I was like, wait, how many cards are we supposed to pick? And Kenny was like, three. And I went, oh, I thought it was two. Oh no, I gotta find a third card. And also, I didn't put any of my cards into a Word document. They're all just saved on my phone because I was laying in bed, half asleep, looking at them. And also, there's a lot of squirrels. And also, I saw a card I know. Wow, I just rambled there. What are you shaking your head for?
I mean, it's totally understandable why you would think that the pick a card was only two cards, because we've had, I mean, pick a card has been extremely variable, the number of cards that you and I pick.
I mean, yeah, there's been times I picked five, there's been times I picked one.
On your side, it's been extremely variable. Like, it can go up and down from, like, three to up to, like, 20, let's say.
Well, let's see how many pictures I actually saved into my phone, because I thought I did two, but maybe I did more. There's one, two, three, four of them.
Okay, that's fine. You know what's funny? A little cross promotion here. Recently, Matt and I recorded an episode of The Intangibles, another podcast on the Geekspective Network. Go check it out. And we were recording. We always do a play of the game where we nominate someone or something as the greatest play in the world that week. And I actually came to the table with two, like, a joint play of the game.
There
and
you
Matt
go.
Called me out, and he said, you would not accept this from Amber if this was Red Mage, Blue Mage. And I was like, you know what? You're right. But this is not the same show, so it doesn't even count.
Wow. I see how it is. Whatever. It's fine. It's just, you know, flattery. Like, sometimes it's just hard to pick just three things or just one thing because they belong in different categories within their categories. There's subcategories to subcategories to subcategories, in which I have all three of these cards belong. Oh, all four of these cards belong to different categories. So anyway.
Well, let's get started. Okay. Give me one of your cards.
The one that I picked because it made me roll my eyes, but also laugh, and also I don't understand it, is this one that is like, Esmoriano Marda Katas Banana Car. It's a super fragilistic Ixalidocious card. I don't know what it is. I just saw it, and I saw that they took up the entire goddamn top. There's no cost cast, because you can play it as long as you discard a card that turn. You can pay a red or a black to cast this spell. Legendary creature, human wizard, when blah, 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 enters the battlefield, you may search your library for a card named the Underworld Cookbook, reveal it, put it into your hand, then shuffle. Sacrifice two foods. Target creature deals 6 damage to itself. So,
do you want to give a try at pronouncing this card name?
This card makes me hate and love Magic so much for lots of different reasons. One, it's a silly game. I love it. Also, I just hate this name. Okay, Asmoran Amar Die Cad I Snackle Dakar. How do you actually pronounce it? Is it gonna be something that's like Jeff? Because I'm gonna be mad.
No,
say Jeff.
It is not. I can give you an official pronunciation.
Do it.
But you gotta give me a second here.
Nope, I need it now. If you don't give it within the next 2 seconds, it doesn't count. 1,000, 2,000, doesn't count.
Asmorano Marti Cata Estinia Koldakar.
Wow, I was super close. I think that it was like I got one syllable off.
That's a good, I got that pronunciation from the prof. At Tolarian College, which is a good version of a pronunciation for it, but it's so ridiculous. So this is one of several cards from this set that are doing basically like riffs or plays off of infamous flavor texts from early Magic's history. So there was some card early on that riffed off of the author of the Infernal Cookbook. And it was this character with this... The whole joke is, ahaha, the name is so long and hard to pronounce. Lol. And now we have that card in the game.
Okay. I like it. Also, because that get that cookbook. And you could... I like that foods is foods, because a food is an item and you could have two foods.
Anyway. Yeah, I mean, adding food into the game was very smart, because as we said when we talked about Eldraine, food feeds into like fairy tales and mythology so heavily.
I mean, speaking of, can I say my next card?
Yeah, go for it. You got like, what, 10?
Yeah. So my next card is Garth One Eye. And the reason why I picked it is just because I knew something about Magic the Gathering. So Garth One Eye costs one of each color. Legendary creature, human wizard. Tap. Choose a card name that hasn't been chosen from among disenchant, Brain Geyser, Terror, Shivan Dragon, Regrowth, and Black Lotus. Create a copy of the card with the chosen name. You may cast the copy. You still pay its cost. A humble appearance belies a master's skill. 5/5. So I dropped that I bought like the first 10 or so like original Magic the Gathering novels way a long time ago. I still haven't read the first book, but I've read enough of it to know who Garth One Eye is in Arena, who is the main pro tag, who is a wizard who looks like, you know, unassuming, has one eye, very original name. And the reason why I connected him to food, because my one, like, I'm like two chapters in or something, and I became so just horrified / offended / I don't know, just repulsed by this character and how he eats pomegranates, which is to say he eats them like he's biting into an apple, and that is wrong.
No, thank you.
No, thank you, Garth One Eye. But what's cool is, like, in that story, there are, like, five houses. They all have different colors, but they're not the Magic the Gathering colors, like brown and white and black and stuff like that. But he is, the way that he casts spells, in my mind, I might be wrong, but they have, like, little satchels, and they're, like, throwing spells out of their little satchels, and he is just very good. And then you get to take, when you win these wizards deals, you get to take people's spells. You get to grab that wizard's sack. Yes.
Yeah, this is one that I don't get the lore, because I have not read those things. Oh! But it is.
For once, I have knowledge. The little cockroach in the corner rubs its little hands.
But it's definitely a neat card, in that it casts all these cool spells, these classic spells. I know there is some like speculation, because normally when a new set comes out and it creates tokens, the set will release prints of the token. And there's some speculation, will there be a Black Lotus token? Because that starts to get into the area of restricted, reserve list reprint stuff. So I'm curious if they're going to do it. I would love it. I think it would be so cool if they just printed a Black Lotus token.
That'd be fun.
Why not? I don't see any reason not to.
Sure. All right, I did my two. Now it's your turn, I guess.
Okay. So my third place pick for Modern Horizons is Universal Automaton, which is a very simple card. It is a one generic mana, 1/1 creature, an artifact creature, shapeshifter, which has changeling. So it's a one mana 1/1 with every creature type. I think it is a very natural card to print in Magic, and I'm surprised it has not been made so far. I think it's just the ultimate, like, reprint. Like, this card could appear in every set that cares about Tribal.
Yeah.
I think it's really cool. Very simple. It's, like, definitely not overpowered. It just slots right into any set that cares about creature types. You're just shaking your head so mad.
Because changelings are also slivers. Slivers? Slivers. Why do I want to say silvers? Changelings are also slivers. Therefore, they are also connected to the hive mind. They broke it with their creatures. Anyway.
I mean.
Good pick! Good pick! Wow, wow!
I think that that's what makes it cool, is that the creature itself is not broken. It just helps tie sets together. I think that's cool. Should I do my second place?
Yeah,
as well?
Go for it. Do it.
So this was a card that I shared with you over Twitter because I thought that you would enjoy the story that is told in the card. This is Late to Dinner. 3 and a white, a sorcery. Return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield and create a food token. This card depicts a rhino man in dinner regalia sipping from a cup, and he is next to a ghostly elephant man also at dinner. It's very much a like the Muppets, the two old men up in the balcony. You know who I'm talking about?
Yeah. Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. I don't know what their names are.
No,
but whatever, you know.
It's like Waldorf and Statler, I want to say.
That sounds way...
Fact check me, but I think that's right. And I love the flavor text. The flavor text says, "I knew you were set in your ways, friend, but even I didn't expect you to keep our engagement under the circumstances." It just tells such a cool, quick, cute story between these two old men.
What did I reply back with when you sent it to me via Twitter?
Let me look.
Gotta get on the Twitter.
You said... us.
What did I... Oh, because I was just imagining.
You just... tell me.
I don't know why I said that. Probably because I just saw two old people eating dinner together. That's what I thought. And also set in our ways.
I think it's not inaccurate. I didn't balk at it. It's just like, yeah, we're old. We're decrepit.
I just want to eat always. And even if I die, I'll show up to if there's food.
I got chicken nuggies for you.
Oh, shit, I'm coming from the grave.
So that's my number two. And just for the flavor, literally.
Well, that's nice. Okay, so I guess I have a card to tell you about.
Okay.
Oh, this is just for fun because I want to use this card. So the card I chose was Chance Encounter, which is 2 red enchantment. Whenever you win a coin flip, put a luck counter on Chance Encounter. At the beginning of your upkeep, if Chance Encounter has 10 or more luck counters on it, you win the game. I love it. I just like having a little mini game to do while I'm playing to see if it happens. And that's the only reason why I chose that, because I like the idea of having that out there and then being able to flip a coin whenever.
You like coin flips. You like mini games. There was another card that almost made my list, very similar, which also involves coin flips. Yusri, Fortune's Flame. 1 blue red for a legendary creature and Efreet, a 2/3 flying. When it attacks, you choose a number between 1 and 5. Here's why you wouldn't like it. Too much text. You choose a number between 1 and 5, and then you flip that many coins. If you win the flip, you draw a card, and if you lose the flip, you take 2 damage. But if you win 5 flips, you can cast all the spells from your hand for free.
I mean, that's fine. It's just too much going on for me. Too many branches of contingencies.
It's like the same thing as the card that you submitted, but with way more steps.
Yeah, and
it like has the same like fun factor, but just too much stuff.
Yep. Wah, 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 wah. Bow.
Bow. And I think that's ultimately why it didn't make my list either.
Sure. All right, your turn.
My number one is another card in a famous cycle of cards. This is Sword of Hearth and Home. So this began in the original Mirrodin block. Equipments, Sword of X and Y, which gives, it's a 3 mana, 2 to equip, gives +2/+2 and protection from 2 colors, and then when the creature hits a player, you get 2 different effects based on those colors. And this cycle has some very, very powerful cards and some extremely weak cards. And I wanted to say this is my number one because it strikes a good balance between the two. So this is +2/+2, protection from green and white. When you deal damage to a player, you exile up to one target creature you own, and then search your library for a basic land card, and then you put them both on into the battlefield and shuffle your library. This strikes me as like a really good balance between it's powerful, and you kind of have to work to make it good, but it's not obscenely broken like Sword of Fire and Ice is.
Which one was this again?
Sword of Hearth and Home.
It's from Target. That's for all you Target people out there who shop in the Hearth and Home section like I do. It's got, like, you know, fake flowers and black plates and forks and, you know, lots of candles around it. Okay. I'm reading it again. So, whenever equipped creature deals combat damage to a player, so it has to go to you, the player.
Yes.
Exile up to one target creature you own, then search your library for a basic land card, then put both cards, the exiled creature and the land card, on the battlefield?
Yep.
Interesting. Ooh, so it'd be nice if you had a card that has battlefield activated stuff, enter the battlefield stuff.
Exactly. And that's why I think it's cool, is that it is potentially powerful, but it's not generically powerful like Fire and Ice is, where it's like you do two damage to a target and you draw a card. It doesn't matter what your deck looks like. If you hit with that, that's great. This one is like you kind of have to work for, but it is good if you do it that way.
So I have a question. So, okay, it can kind of roll into my card that I didn't put these in any order. I just, like, screen grabbed the ones I liked.
That's fine.
Or saw. And it couldn't be, you know, a Modern Horizons talk about pick a card if I don't say something about Sarah's Emissary or Sarah something. So I chose Sarah's Emissary,
yeah.
Which is 4.
I knew this was going to come up.
Okay, cool. So Sarah's Emissary costs 4 white, an angel. Not Sarah herself, but Sarah's Emissary. So she pooped this one out too. Flying, as Sarah's Emissary enters the battlefield, choose a card type. You and creatures you control have protection from the chosen card type. So let me ask you this. When it says when she enters the battlefield, or when it enters the battlefield, choose a card type. But doesn't say anything about if she leaves the battlefield, that goes away. So if she enters the battlefield and you have to choose protection from that, does that go away if she leaves?
It does.
Damn it. Well, I was going to say it'd be really fun to do sort of Hearth and Home and be like...
To bounce them and give you more and more
protection from goblin, protection from artifact creatures, protection from, you know, whatever.
But it says choose a card type. It says choose a card type. Could you say sorcery?
You could. Or you could say creature. Yeah, so this is like creature, instant, sorcery, enchantment, artifact, planeswalker, like those things.
Damn, son, Sarah's Emissary, what up?
It's pretty powerful. Giving you and your creatures like protection from creatures is nuts.
And it's really cool because I like that it says choose a card type, because so many other things, there's other cards in this where I'm like, you have to specifically, like there was the card that was like, your opponents can't play cards if they used any color. Or no. It was something where it was an artifact that basically prevented people from paying spells if they used there was a color in it, right? Or is it the opposite? Yes.
Mirror of the Void. It counters spells if it's a colored spell, basically.
Right. And I was like, well.
Or opposite, if it doesn't have a color.
Yeah, something like that. But it's very specific, so it's like the only reason why you would want to have that card is if you know you're going up against somebody who is going to be playing either a ton of spell, like they have spell colors, or they have, or if they're just all artifact or doing colorless.
Right.
So I was like, I didn't want to pick that. I liked the idea of it, but it's like a card, again, that's very specific upon, like, knowing who you're playing against. Maybe it's a sideboard card, right?
Yes, it is.
Whereas, like, I like Sarah's stuff where it's like, oh, well, I can just say, oh, you're a control player. I want protection against instants. Okay, you're a, you know, burn person. Yeah, it's like, it's, you could just pick, you know.
You're an aggressive creature deck. Protection from creatures.
Yeah, that's really cool. I like that. So I guess she is my number one pick.
Wow. Very surprising. I can't believe it.
I guess
it's
like
not
that,
Sarah really. Herself. It's her emissary.
No, it's her emissary, so it's okay. I feel for them.
Before we move on, do you have any closing thoughts about Modern Horizons, what we've seen so far? I know you've had a note about squirrels.
Oh, yeah. I was like, what's up with all these goddamn squirrels? There's like nothing but like there's such a specific amount of squirrel. There's like 6 squirrel cards.
So here's what I can gather, much like an acorn, about squirrels. So Mark Rosewater, for a long, long time, has been obsessed. He has a few different, like, specific obsessions. So he loves poison, like poison counters. He loves squirrels. He loves cards and unsets. He's just a very kind of off-the-wall guy, which you would know, like, if you watch any of his content.
Sure.
He's kind of off-the-wall guy. So he has been obsessed with trying to get more squirrels. They used to be in the game very briefly, and he's been obsessed with trying to bring them back. And finally, I think, in Modern Horizons 1, he got a squirrel card in. Like, he finally convinced whoever is, like, gatekeeping the squirrels. He's like, let's print one squirrel and see how it does. And based on what they're doing in this set, it must have been insanely popular. Because there are so many squirrel cards
in
this set.
There's too many damn squirrels. Get your squirrel fetish out of here, Mark Rosewater. All you filthy squirrel lovers. I don't know. It's fine.
It must have done really well.
Must have. Whatever. Fine. But now I want more goblins. I demand cowboy goblins. I mean, I'm not Mark Rosewater, so I'll probably never see that. But you know what? I can shout it out loud.
I mean, look, we are in a world where we can explore universes beyond. Surely there's a goblin universe we can explore.
I need
We know for a fact people love goblins.
I'm going to say it right here. I want to get to the point where I am commissioned art to do a special secret lair set with my goblins
that
I draw. I'm going to say it right now. That's
called
what I want to do. I'm calling the shot, you know, give me time. I think it's my new dream is to draw some goblin. What are you laughing about?
I think it's my new dream.
I mean, here's the thing, right? I say it out loud, but I also am not holding myself to it. But I would like it. That'd be fun. Those cute little goblins. Aww.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen art that's very much in the same vein.
Yeah.
I think it's possible.
We'll see. Wizards, my email. Wizards, my email address is rocketorca@gmail.com. Hey, guess what? You can go to my website, rocketorca.com. Okay, thank you. Bye.
Okay, I think we've talked enough about Modern Horizons.
Yeah, I'm done.
Now let's get into a bigger topic, one that you and I have even broached previously.
Ba-da-da!
But first, a quick word from Geekspective. Sometimes, winning a game isn't about dealing the most damage, or drawing the most cards, or making any measurable contribution towards victory. But hey, just because you don't have the stats doesn't mean you're not a f***ing gamer god, alright? Enter The Intangibles, a podcast on the Geekspective Network, where me, Kenny, and my brother Matt break down all the things that are hard to quantify in games. All kinds of games. We're talking classics like Sonic's the Hedgehogs, and Chess, and 3D Pinball Space Cadet. Great game, by the way. We're talking new releases like
insert latest trending games on Twitch here.
Single player, co-op, competitive, card games, board games, role-playing games, play-by-mail games, the wakes. We do deep dives into our favorite games, digging into the intangibles that make them great and the intangibles that will make you a better player, and hey, maybe even a better person. Check out The Intangibles on whatever the heck platform you're listening to right now. Once again, it's time for an academic debate between a civilized scholar and a homicidal brute. Let's begin. Pro play. Pro Magic the Gathering play. So, We're recording this on May 27th, and this episode will come out on Monday of next week. Recent news is that Wizards has announced the MPL, the Magic Pro League, which is the current incarnation of the Magic Pro scene, is going to be disbanded after this current year. So they have like basically one more season, and then it's going to be done and replaced by something. No announcement of what that thing will be.
Okay.
So I thought to lead off here, I wanted to give a brief timeline of what professional Magic play has looked like. And then we can dive into our thoughts.
Okie dokie.
So the first Magic the Gathering World Championship was held at the 1994 Gen Con. And it had 512 players. That's so funny. Magic came out in 93, World Championship in 94 with 500 players. Very small affair. And it carried on like that for a bit. It's just like the world championship is whoever showed up to this event, basically. But then you get in 1996, the Pro Tour. And this became the dominant Magic Pro scene for a long time, until actually 2018. So this is 22 years of Pro Tour play. So in the Pro Tour, the big idea is that anybody can rise up through the ranks and play with the pros. You, me, we could play, we could take place in various tournaments. To qualify for the Pro Tour, you can either get in the top 25 of the last year, or you can win specific tournaments called PTQs, Pro Tour Qualifiers, or get the top 8 in one of the big tournaments, like a Grand Prix. That's how you could join the Pro Tour, and now you're playing with the pros, you know, week in, week out. And then at the end of the year, big tournament, there's a championship, and then there's a world championship. That was the entire scene for about 22 years. Then in 2019, that gets disbanded. This over two decades of Pro Tour, that doesn't exist anymore. Now we're gonna get the Magic Pro League, which came out and it coincided with Magic Arena. And the aim here is turning Magic into a viable esport. That was the entire mission objective. It's a complete mess from the get-go. The pros have been working with this old system, so of course they're going to be crotchety about a new system that they have to adapt to, but it's just hard to understand. And I actually have a link that I want to share with you.
I'm clicking.
So if you want to look this up, you can search for the 2020 to 2021 Magic Pro League season overview. And I am not going to go into detail here. All I want you to do is to scroll down through the amount of text that is in this and the graphics that are included.
I don't like when I see an asterisk that says whichever is greater out of context.
Yeah.
Why is there the gauntlet?
The what? Gauntlet.
The gauntlet. Rivals gauntlet. Challenger gauntlet. That's what? So why is there two leagues?
So this entire page is to explain to you the structure of the MPL, how this works. How do you get to these championships? How do you get to these different leagues? I mean, I'm scrolling down right now towards the bottom. There is a graphic called Magic World Championship 2021, and it is nonsense. There are six different things, and they all are fed in with various arrows up to a graphic that says World Championship. I don't know how any of this is supposed to work. Glancing at it, I see Pro League, MPL Gauntlet, Challenger Gauntlet, Rivals League, World Championship.
Yeah.
I don't know what any of this means.
Okay, I have questions. One.
Yeah.
Two questions I have right off the bat. This is replacing previous pro stuff.
Yes. Pro Tour is gone. This replaces it completely.
Okay. Then when did they announce that this was happening, and when did they want to implement it?
So it's basically the year before it came into effect.
Okay. So here's first problem. I don't know how they again, it's like the R&D side of stuff. This to me feels like an R&D project, right? Where you're trying to figure out a new process of how you want your workflow to go. And for me, that is, especially a game like this and the communities that exist, I would have said this is how it should have been a 5-year process. A 5-year process of one, a year of them, you know, play, quote unquote, play testing out, seeing how it works. Like, we're gonna try this stuff with a small set of group, subset of group, and see how this works out. And maybe they did, you know, I don't know. I could be speaking out of my ass right now. Two, I would have gotten it out there as a roadmap for Pro Tour so people understood that this is what we're going to be phasing through. Because one of the things that comes out of the R&D stuff when you're play testing even a system, even a process, is you'll get the feedback of, this seems very convoluted, this seems very difficult, this is hard for me to parse, and blah 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 blah, and they could potentially change how they structure their flow, right? And then once you get that figured out, then you can say, okay, we've done that in 2 years. We've taken care of that in 2 years. We know we wanted to change this for a while. So we've taken 2 years to kind of like do consumer research and feedback. And again, maybe they did. Then I would say the next 3 years would be preparing people for that, right? Which would be to say, this is what we're getting ready to, you guys. This is what we're getting ready to. Do videos, do instructional stuff. You are basically preparing Pro Tour to start thinking in that way, because people don't like change, especially when you've had 22 years of things being a certain way. To do the changeover is just, I mean, it's super, and 1 year is just super jarring. And from the outset, if that's really truly what happened, is like, hey, we have this new thing, we're canceling Pro Tour, in a year we're gonna do this, I think that would be very hard, especially when you're doing it in a way where, like, people are already overwhelmed, like, generally, like, because of the pandemic, because of life.
To be fair, the MPL came into play. This is like a revamp of it, a revamp. This happened, I think, in 2019.
Okay, still.
The original, like, Switch. It was still a, this is the Pro Tour. And they announced at the end of this year, we're going to move to this other
system. Years. I feel like a year is not enough time for people to make that transition mentally and be okay with it. And so then the next thing that I'm having issues with is, like, the accessibility of this to me, like, from an instructional design standpoint. That would have been nice to have a video. If they would have made it easier, that would have helped a lot. I mean, maybe there does exist, but you think they would be literally linked on this page if there was a video, because people are just better at listening and learning versus reading a bunch of text, especially people like me, right, who have ADHD and can't focus, you know?
I definitely agree with you. I think that even with a video, because the prof, when this was announced, made a video detailing here's how the system works, it kind of reveals that ultimately the problem, right, is the system. And, like, as you well know, the product at the end of the day determines how simple I can, right, make it. Like, if it's too complicated, I can only simplify it and make it accessible to a certain degree.
What Kenny's referring to is, basically, I have told in my work life, when I do write instruction manuals for products, that I can make the instruction manual only as simple as the product is. If your product requires somebody to turn a knob, flip a switch, and rotate the donger, like, I have to say all of that. And the more stuff you build onto a product, the more brain space, the more exhausting it becomes to execute it. Especially if 1, 2, 3 are also hard. Like, to rotate the donger, it's like, it doesn't click right. You know, it doesn't feel right. It's too hard to twist. That gets frustrating. So if step one is hard to execute on, And then step two is hard to execute on. And then step three is also hard to execute on. Basically, you've made an incomprehensible, truly, and no instructions, no way that you write it is going to ever overcome those frustrations. So same here is if you're trying to explain a process to somebody and you can't do it within like 30 seconds or like the just generic overview of it, the each additional 10 seconds you add on is you're losing that cognitive brain power for someone to process that information. And so I'm looking at this and I'm going, nope, didn't too long. Teal Deer didn't read, you know, too long, didn't read.
I think that's the case with this. I think the actual process is so convoluted that you can simplify it as much as you would like, and it will still be difficult to understand because at the end of the day, the process is difficult to understand. That was one of the big challenges going into the MPL and something that I think will play into the rest of our discussion, which is it's not clear how do I, aspiring Magic player who is interested in playing in a professional capacity, how do I get into this? How do I plug into this system? It's not very clear what that road looks like. And as we will discuss, one of the big complaints that the pros had is that the MPL is kind of set. It's 32 players in the Magic Pro League who are at the top of the pile competing against each other. In a given season, only a couple of them rotate out and only a couple of people can get in. It's not easy to crack into the pro scene under this system.
Well, and that's the thing is that I think, you know, you alluded to it already that we really talked about this prior to the recording where
Just to frame the conversation and what you're about to get into, the question I asked you when we talked previously was, does professional Magic play actually influence or matter to the average Magic player? Is it important to the game? And that got you going on how you think about the different tiers of Magic player.
Okay,
basically.
So I'll talk about that. So Kenny asked me the question, does pro Magic play matter to Magic the Gathering? And I said, I think because of the inherent competitiveness to the game, yes, it's important to have pro, not only from a consumer, you know, standpoint, like me playing a game and wanting to compete, but also from a business aspect, because you're getting people to invest in and honestly promote your game without really being paid to promote your game, right? And it would not be wise of them to, one, get rid of a pro, like trying to get rid of basically an esport, if you will. They should look into it. I think Wizards of the Coast should be doing it because
that's what they were trying to do.
It's a profitable aspect of the thing. Again, you know. But here, what Kenny was talking about with where I was grouping like groups of Magic the Gathering players, right? So you've got the people who want to be pro, who want to play competitively, who are hardcore into it. Like that is what they're doing. And they also, you got the pros, you got the aspiring pros, people who are wanting to get into that. And so they are playing Magic competitively because they want to become pro players. Then you have your diehard fans who may not want to go to pro, but they are, you know, at the game shop every Friday night. They like participating in events. They like their favorite pastime is literally like, I can't wait to construct this deck or make this commander deck or ooh, what's coming out, or you know, they're your like dedicated like hardcore fans. Then you have your casual players who, you know, that's where I put myself now. Like I like Magic. I play Arena. It's very accessible. I play Cube. We have a podcast. I'm into it, but I'm casual. And then you have your pickups, right? Like the people who are just like, I want to try this, right? So you got five categories. Talking about categories, the first section we're talking about categories here. So pros, aspiring pros, diehard fans, casuals, and then like the pickups. I want to try it out. Maybe it sticks, maybe it doesn't. And so if you're trying to build a business model of esports for your game, you should be making it as accessible as possible so that one, your pros are, you know, can one easily understand their system. Aspiring pros can easily understand the system. And then maybe you can get those diehard fans to be like, oh, well, maybe I could be, maybe I could, I play Magic all the time already as it is. Maybe I could be pro, to flip over to pro, make it easier for them to do it. And then maybe even your casuals are like, well, dang, people are playing a lot of Magics. My friend that I used to play every once in a while is winning money. Maybe I could also win the money. You know what I mean? And so I think,
yeah,
you know, there's, if you are not in the TTRPG space, and you're a listener of the show, like I talk about accessibility in TTRPGs, and then there's lots of accessibility talks across the board in all sectors of our communities and economies and yada, yada, yada. But to like, to make these gates, these barriers of learning, it just really does not behoove their a business at all. Because especially if you're going from a business aspect, one, you should want everybody to want to play your game. Like, yeah, that'd be great. You shouldn't just be catering to one subset because they're gonna die one day. You want to make it grow.
And also, the segment of the game that you're cutting off by cutting off pro, you're cutting off the premier players, like the people who are best at your game. The people that optimally you would want to highlight are the people who are being cut off here.
Yeah.
That's a problem. Here's my question. Here's what I was thinking when we were having our conversation the other day. I imagine the people at Wizards are having an internal discussion, which is like, okay, let's say we cut off supported professional play. There will still be streamers who are at the top of Magic play, who will be inspiring other players to buy decks and do things and like different deck lists. From their perspective, it's probably like, what are we losing by cutting pro when we still have professional streamers? Do you feel they are still losing something?
They're losing a structure for which to put those professional streamers and pro players. Because to me, ultimately, this game is a very social game. Like, you're playing against people. You, like, some of my best memories of Magic are literally like when there are 4+ people. You know, it's playing against somebody. And events, like, people are social creatures. Again, it's just like you're losing a playground, if you will, by cutting out. And why would you do that? Because yeah, you could have a professional streamer stream, but that's just one person. And where's the interaction? You know, we don't see that interaction, the hype, the drama of, you know, two people, five people, a tournament bracket, you know. There's a reason why people like esports and watch people on teams and people who train together. Like, ultimately, the game is great, but what makes it great are the people playing it, you know? So, and like the chance to interact and be like, I got to play against this professional person because I worked really hard and I got to the point where I got to meet a person that I aspire to be like at the table playing that. You kind of like take that away
and that
a little bit.
That is the special promise of Magic the Gathering compared to other esports. Like, for me, Kenny, I will never play against Doublelift, you know, a professional League of Legends player. But if I played and got into a Pro Tour qualifier, I could play against LSV.
Yeah.
You know, I could play against the best in the game, potentially.
Beat me, LSV. Ground me into the ground.
Well, I think that's also something special. If I would be destroyed by Doublelift. Magic is a game where chance plays into things.
Yeah, true.
And you could actually, like, you'd be disadvantaged probably against someone, a pro player, but you could beat a pro player in Magic the Gathering.
Right.
And that is kind of a special excitement that you don't get in other games. That's what the game needs to deliver on.
Magic is special. Magic is a special game.
It is. I mean, On the one hand, I don't think I've been influenced very much by pro play, but by the other token, I definitely have been. It's not a direct thing, but it has trickled down, and the pro players do matter to me, and they influence how I think about and conceptualize the game. I'm sure this is something we'll come back to in the future as Magic reveals how they want to do pro play in the future, whatever announcements they're going to do. Until then, however, we're just going to wrap up for now. This has been Red Mage, Blue Mage. I've been Kenny. You can find me at Wolfmere.
I've been a little cockroach in a corner.
You can find me at Rocket Orca.
Kenny, you can find me at Cockroach.
My little cockroach goblin. Yeah, that's me. Bye.